don't smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death.
Tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hate to make him wait, but you just gotta have another cigarette.
All right, we're here for Cannabis and Health Day, and we're joined again by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Associate Professor of Psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. Dr. Earlywine, welcome back to the Daily Audio Stash.
Oh, it's great to be on again.
Hey, you had emailed me something last week, and I thought this was definitely something we should cover as far as talking about this theory of cannabis addiction. And again, it also kind of dovetails in with the whole potency issue. And this is this study that you just sent me about cannabis dependency along with tobacco use. I guess a lot of people do smoke both substances, and apparently there's a problem with that.
Well, this is an interesting data set from Bruce Johnson's crew down in New York City. And basically, they're looking at folks who use blunts or who chase marijuana with tobacco. So they smoke a blunt and then they smoke a cigar or something like that. And this combination of tobacco and cannabis seems to be more likely to produce dependent symptoms than just using cannabis alone. And I actually just reviewed a confidential paper that I can't discuss in great detail, but basically sort of confirming these sorts of findings. And what this says to me is, in fact, something a little suspicious about what cannabis dependence really means. So often you'll see these cannabis withdrawal scales, and there are things like, oh, I'm irritable, I'm quick to anger, that kind of thing like that. And I can't help but wonder, is some of that a little bit confounded with tobacco use or nicotine withdrawal rather than what people have been presenting as cannabis withdrawal?
Well, that's quite interesting, you know, and I actually kind of underwent my own little experiment with this, having been in Helena, Montana last week, and of course had to fly, so I'm of course very responsible and don't travel with any cannabis or anything like that, and had to go 3 days, and you know, the only thing that I could really detect was having trouble sleeping, and I think that may have had more to do with the hotel room and the noisy people next to me. It's interesting, this tobacco study, though, that it says that I was looking at the abstract here, and I like where they say here, let's see, conventional wisdom says that this is because marijuana is stronger today than in the past, but this explanation is inadequate on several levels. Recent reports that marijuana has increased in potency by factors of 10 to 20 are unsupported. So it's nice to see they shot down that potency argument. And I guess what they're trying to say here is that what has been ascribed to this so-called killer skunk marijuana potency really could have a whole lot more to do with the tobacco in the blunts.
I really like that explanation, and in fact, this lends itself to easy animal research or human psychopharm research where people would come into the lab and use both substances at the same time, and I'm hoping that these kinds of studies are getting funded, because if you take a close look at this, what has been the big change, there really hasn't been a very dramatic increase in potency, despite what some of the media have led us to believe, but this blunt chasing and blunt use is definitely markedly more common than it was even 10 years ago. And if that nicotine is contributing to the perception of cannabis dependence and addictive qualities, well, then we really need to understand that and take that kind of work into account. I do want to reference my student, Sarah Smucker-Barnwell, who had done something comparable looking at folks who use alcohol and cannabis together, and how heavy drinkers were also more likely to report cannabis-dependent symptoms. And I feel like that may also be the sort of confusion of what am I withdrawing from, or what is the source of this negative emotional experience, and is it really cannabis or is it something else? And in poly drug users, I'm afraid we can't really know. And I hate to think that cannabis has to bear the brunt and get the finger pointed at it as the dependence-producing substance, when in fact there are other substances that are being used simultaneously.
Well, you know, I'd imagine there's a lot of other factors that make this hard to study. You know, you're mentioning, you know, hard to find a population that only is using cannabis, not in use with alcohol or tobacco or any other illicit drugs. And I would also think that people, if they were going to admit to an illicit drug, they would admit to marijuana much more readily than they would admit to methamphetamine or cocaine or any other illicit drugs.
And that social desirability is something that's very hard to measure. So, I mean, you can imagine trying to construct a questionnaire that basically asks, hey, are you going to lie to me?
Yeah.
So you can see how any attempt to sort of co-vary some of this stuff out can get very difficult. in the old days when Fulton and folks like Cohen had people come into the lab and actually live at the hospital for you know, weeks on end sometimes, that was the real opportunity to see how you know, cannabis contributed to dependence, and we had very little evidence in a 93-day study done by Cohen, oh gosh, back in the 70s. And Fulton's work more recently suggests that, you know, THC administered across time, we do see some moderate tolerance, but we don't see any of this stereotypical withdrawal and dependence that seems to get hyped up when people are wagging their fingers at cannabis users and saying it's addictive.
I was wondering one thing, too. This study, of course, is focusing on how the tobacco may be leading to the increase of these cannabis-dependent symptoms. Does it work the other way around? Do they look at how does cannabis increase or decrease, perhaps, someone's ability to stop using cigarettes? Has that been looked at in the literature?
It's funny because the anecdotes about, oh, I used cannabis to get off of tobacco are really, really common. I'm sure you've been at many a conference where you've heard people tell that story. Unfortunately, this is not a high priority for NIDA to discover that smoking marijuana can help decrease tobacco use, so that research hasn't been done formally. I also have seen data, however, suggesting that marijuana turns into this odd gateway into tobacco dependence, so that folks who are using cannabis early in life who also use cigarettes are more likely to become dependent on cigarettes. But I don't think that makes a ton of sense pharmacologically so much as just people who use drugs early in life are often the ones who do end up dependent on cigarettes, perhaps for, you know, dispositional reasons, because they're sensation seekers or because they're just that sort of person, not necessarily some chemical response to THC.
Now, how does the data in this study look with respect to ethnicity? Is there more of this tobacco and cannabis use among Latinos or African Americans, or is it pretty widespread across the spectrum?
Well, I'm a big fan of this research group, and because they're working in the city, they can get a nice ethnic breakdown on this. And so I do feel like this isn't just a bunch of whites. Basically, you know, we're in the South Bronx. We've got lower-income Manhattan folks as well, and so we do see a higher percentage of African-Americans and Latinos in this sample than in a lot of other studies of marijuana use. It's too early to say, oh, this is more common among, say, African-Americans, and I feel like there's a tendency to point to the ethnic difference data and really go with the notion of abuse and how being arrested or having legal problems related to cannabis leads to a diagnosis of abuse. And we discussed before how if you're basically, you know, darker than me and you, then what a surprise, you're at higher risk for being arrested for possession. And that tends to be a symptom of abuse. Here in these data, they're focusing only on dependence, on not on that particular symptom. And I'm eager to see if there are ethnic differences in using blunts or in using tobacco and cannabis simultaneously. Would that somehow account for some of these ethnic differences that have been reported in rates of cannabis-related problems?
Well, yes, it's really hard when you look at all of the factors involved that to separate out what is the cannabis causing versus what is the cannabis prohibition causing. I always think of that that poster that Normal puts out, you know, a pot smoker is arrested every 38 seconds, and you wonder why we're paranoid. So that just gives me that idea there.
Well, I want to emphasize this in conjunction with the vaporizer study I published last year that really suggests that there is a synergy between cannabis and tobacco as far as respiratory symptoms are concerned. So that if folks are using cannabis and tobacco simultaneously, they might want to consider moving from blunts to joints and moving from joints to the vaporizer just to keep those respiratory symptoms down. We've seen from Tashkin's data it's probably not going to turn into lung cancer if you're smoking only cannabis, but this combination of tobacco and cannabis is markedly more problematic. And I mean, I hate to sound like anybody's mom, but it's really not good to be smoking tobacco. So if you can quit, by all means do.
Well, absolutely. And if cannabis gets you there, then that sounds like at least a healthier alternative than smoking the tobacco and the cannabis. Dr. Earlywine, thanks for joining us here again on our Daily Audio Stash.
Always a pleasure.